On Thursday this week, Australia had a national day of mourning to honour the victims and all those impacted by the Bondi Beach terrorist attack on the 14th of December. One of the many questions in the aftermath of that tragedy is where and how an atrocity like this should be memorialised. Waverley Council says discussions about a permanent memorial are already underway, and there's already been debate about what should happen to the Bondi footbridge that the terrorists used to conduct their anti-Semitic attack. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns has said it should be demolished. Our first guest today is someone who's done extensive research on exactly this issue. Dr. Rosemary Hollow is the author of How Nations Mourn, The Memorialisation and Management of Contemporary Atrocity Sites. That's the title of her 2011 PhD thesis, a study that's become tragically relevant after Bondi. Rosemary's now president of the National Parks Association ACT Committee. Rosemary, thanks very much for joining us live on Sunday Extra this morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
A thought-provoking quote in your thesis is this one: in grief, people want to remember. In trauma, they want to forget. Where and when was that said?
That was a quote from the late Dr. Beverly Raphael when she went down to the Tasman Peninsula to talk to the Port Arthur community, who were grappling with what to do with the remains of the Broad Arrow Cafe.
Really interesting. And what impact did that observation have as far as you're aware?
Well, it actually had quite a significant impact, because I had a number of the local community who I did interviews with said they basically changed their minds. So their initial response was not unlike Chris Minns' response, oh, you've got to clear the site, just remove all trace of it. But they said after listening to her, they changed their minds. And one of them said to me a very memorable quote, that you've actually got to leave some of the structure, otherwise future communities won't understand.
Mm-hmm. And just remind us, what did happen with the remains of the Broad Arrow Cafe in particular at the Port Arthur site?
Basically, the walls were kept, the roof was removed, the internal, all the fittings were removed, and the original walls of the cafe were kept and incorporated in the memorial. And it had quite a significant impact on one of the families of the victims who some years later, went down to the site, and they realised seeing the walls of the memorial, or the walls of the Broad Arrow in the memorial, it made them realise that there was no chance of escape. Mm. So quite significant.
Mm. I was struck by another one of your observations from that study from 2011. The physical remains of an atrocity can be a more powerful reminder of the violence than a memorial. What led you to that view?
Both site visits and talking to people. Memorials, bronze plaques, stone structures can be quite powerful, but I had people say to me, and I thought myself in visiting spending time both at Port Arthur and visiting the Oklahoma City Memorial, that when you, for example, in Oklahoma City, saw the remains of the damaged offices that had been left as part of the Memorial Museum, just the impact of what had happened to so many people.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that the culture of memorialisation has changed over time. You note that in Melbourne in 1987, 7 people died in the Hoddle Street Massacre, and then 8 people in the Queen Street Massacre just 4 months later. But there were no memorials to mark those sites. Why was that? And could you use that, I suppose, as a launching pad for how memorialisation's changed over time?
It has. Look, I think there's a few issues, the location of those memorials, but I think actually internet, social media and politics have all had a significant impact on how and what we remember. Port Arthur was a very significant national site. The number of deaths and where they came from resulted in immediate response from the Australian government. Victorian memorials in 86, or Victorian sites rather in 86, it was very much regarded as that's a Victorian issue, and governments hadn't got involved in memorials to the extent that they do now.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Dr. Rosemary Hollow, who wrote the 2011 study, How Nations Mourn, the Memorialisation and Management of Contemporary Atrocity Sites. And Rosemary, you've mentioned both Port Arthur and Oklahoma City. The Oklahoma City bombing was in 1995, a year before the Port Arthur massacre. And you pinpoint those two events as really significant in the change and evolution of the memorialisation of atrocities. Thinking back on it now, I suppose over a decade after you knocked off that that thesis, what are the lessons of those places, Oklahoma City and Port Arthur, in terms of memorials as you view it?
Look, I think the lessons learned are very relevant to the response to the sad events at Bondi, particularly give everyone a chance to be involved who had been affected. Obviously in Bondi, the Jewish community, but the Surf Life Saving Club members were involved in supporting and recovery afterwards. It's don't come out with decisions straight away. Give the community time and give people time to consult. The other issue that was done at Port Arthur, and I mentioned Beverly Raphael was brought in as, to provide advice, and they also had a heritage advisor, Jane Lennon, who came down and did a study and recommendations, and there was huge consultation right across the community. Jane Lennon received a couple of hundred letters and did interviews with people on what they thought. Consultation across the community is really important, and take your time. Don't rush in.
What did you draw from the Oklahoma experience? And perhaps you can tell us about the memorials that, were the result of the process there.
Oh, look, Oklahoma City is a huge site. There's a memorial museum. It's an interesting space. There's individual memorials. There's 186 chairs with names of those who died, including children. There's space for children to write and leave messages. And an interesting aspect of Oklahoma City Memorial, they also have an exhibition of all the tributes and items left at the site, which is an issue that we don't seem to have come to terms with in Australia, and remembering how communities responded with their messages and a whole lot of other items.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I was reading last night that there's a work commissioned, I think, by the City of Sydney to memorialise the Lint Siege Cafe, Cafe Siege.
Yes.
And that is, it's quite a subtle work, not immediately obvious, I think, in some respects, but it involves reflections of the flowers that were left in Martin Place afterwards, some of which are now sort of embedded in in the stones of Martin Place.
Oh, and look, I think that's a very, as you said, it's a subtle work, but it's still quite evocative, and obviously not everyone walking over it sees it, but I have watched people who've sort of looked down and stopped and read it, and I think, yeah, it's an appropriate memorial, particularly at that heavily used area.
Some memorials are more planned than others. Could you tell us about the Hue and Pine Cross at Port Arthur?
Look, that's really interesting, and it brings up a whole issue of what I've called spontaneous memorials. The Hue and Pine Cross was made by two local Tasman Peninsula workers from Tasmanian Timbers and installed at the waterfront directly in front of the Borrowdara Cafe within a few months afterwards. And it was used as a site. People left flowers, messages. I went to memorial services that were held by it. When the planning for the memorial was underway, which took a couple of years, it was almost put in the, what do we do with the two hard basket? This is not part of the memorial. And then 12 months after the memorials opened in the early hours of the morning, local community basically moved the memorial to the back, moved the Huon Pine Cross to the back of the memorial where it remains. And it's still a site where people leave flowers and messages. So it's a very interesting example of how spontaneous memorials should be considered very much part of how people remember.
We've had some fascinating texts about this issue, including one saying, having visited 32 sites of massacres of First People during the frontier wars, there's only been one memorial. And that raises another issue that I wanted to discuss with you, Rosemary. Obviously, the 14th of December saw an iconic Australian location become the scene of anti-Semitic terrorism and murder. And so there are lots of different traditions and cultures bound up in the tragedy. The same could be said of the 2002 Bali bombings, in which 202 people, including 88 Australians, died. What do the memorials in Kuta tell us about cross-cultural memorialisation?
Well, it's a really interesting memorial, and the local Balinese community response, who were the driving force behind the memorial, although the Australian consulate was very much involved. Part of their reason for building the memorial was not to tell the story of the terrorists, but they hoped it would have an impact on others, or then they talked about young men who might be thinking about being involved in Jamaat Islamiyah, and they were hoping that this memorial would be a reminder of what impact terrorism had on the local community. And it's a memorial with very significant Balinese symbols, but it still provides space, and lots of Australians still go there to remember those who lost their lives.
Mm-hmm. Just so many fascinating and important issues to consider in this area. Dr. Rosemary Hollow, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And Rosemary is the president of the National Parks Association ACT Committee these days, but also the author of the study How Nations Mourn, the Memorialisation and Management of Contemporary Atrocity Sites. And we've had one text from Philip noting that the parents of one of the Bondi victims, Matilda, have suggested that the Bondi footbridge should be painted yellow in memory of Matilda. On Sunday Extra, it's 24 minutes past seven.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.